Alive and Kicking with Claire McKenna on News Talk.
Now, most of us can identify a thing, or perhaps several, which we don't need to quit, but certainly do too much of. These little addictions build up, and the snowball effect can mean the sum total is huge. In her latest book, Little Addictions, best-selling author Catherine Gray explores how when we master these, we free up peace of mind, disposable income, time, well-being and happiness. Catherine, you're very welcome.
Thank you for having me.
And when you put it that way, little addictions, little things that we feel we might just do a little too often that can't really be that bad. But when you talk about peace of mind, disposable income, time, well-being and happiness, you can see that the balance is a little off.
Absolutely. And what tends to happen is that it becomes a rolling stone that gathers, right? So say, for instance, if I at 10:30 when I'm meant to be going to bed, I click next episode and then I lose an hour of sleep. The next day, I'm only going to be a little bit smudged. I'm not going to ruin my day, but I'm more likely to overuse things like caffeine or sugar or nicotine, you know, pick up social media, spend longer on that to look for some fast dopamine. And it just means that these things incrementally gather consequences, and the individual consequences are tiny, but they really add up.
It's a really fascinating book. Not only do you deeply research all of these areas and all of the little addictions that we can all lean on from time to time, but it's also deeply personal. Even in your opening chapter, you talk and outline what your primary and secondary addictions are. Tell us a little bit about those, and how did you feel about sharing so openly?
I mean, I'm a chronic oversharer. I can't seem to help it. I always write about my personal life in my books. And I've written before about having big clinical addictions to alcohol and also cigarettes. And then I took a year off dating to conquer my love addiction, which was basically thinking I needed to get married to be a complete human. And these are very different. So there's a massive nuance between big addictions and little addictions. These aren't things that I want to quit. But I'll still fess up to them. You know, I have 10. I'm riddled with little addictions. And I still want to regain my agency to choose them. But unfortunately, I have no idea how to moderate because I'm very much a go hard or go home type of personality. So that's why I went out and asked 24 experts, how can I get on top of these? How do I balance them? How do I use them in the way that I intend to use them rather than find that I constantly use them a little bit too much?
So we've touched on some of them, just so listeners are clear. What is the definition of little addictions and the difference between primary and secondary?
So primary and secondary addictions are, they relate to big addictions, so otherwise known as clinical addictions. And your primary addiction is something that might ruin your life. So it could be a gambler who stands to lose their house, or like I was, somebody who drinks to the point where, you know, they're drinking a life-endangering amount, or somebody who's smoking themselves into an early grave. That's primary and secondary. And what we tend to find is that once we crack open primary and secondary addictions, if you have a big addiction, there are lots of littler addictions inside. So I use the metaphor of a Russian stacking doll. It's like even once you've conquered the outer cells, there's still all these littler dolls inside. They're ever descending, but they're also unignorable. But even if you've never had a clinical big addiction, everyone out there has or has had some sort of little addiction. And I'm willing to die on the hill of a statement that actually most of us have several. And as soon as I mention the premise of the book to anyone, they can name them. So I think that's a sign that, you know, most of us struggle with using something a little bit too much.
So what do we need to understand about our brains and addictions, be them they big or small?
So what we need to understand is, so we are, many of these little addictions tap into ancient urges. First of all, I spoke with evolutionary psychologists and neuroscientists who told me that what we have is like a hunter-gatherer brain in a modern body and landscape. And many of the things that we use too much, say, for instance, social media, that taps into our urge to be accepted by our tribe or community. Because even 100 years ago, not being accepted, being ostracized, could have meant death. And you'll find that anything that is addictive, whether it's Right Move or ultra-processed food, taps into some sort of ancestral urge. So with Right Move, that's to do with our obsession to get the best cave, right? And that's why a lot of people find us looking for houses when we've got no intention of moving. With shopping, that taps into hunting and gathering and foraging, you know, all of those things that are very deep inside our neural hardwiring. So it's really interesting to trace it back to the roots and understand why we do it. And that's the first stage to beginning to get control over it.
How did you choose which addictions you were going to focus on for the book, or were they obvious? Are they common in all? Because, I mean, there is quite a long, extensive list you go through.
Yeah, I mean, I spoke, again, this was down to speaking to experts as well, but the 15 are alcohol, nicotine and cannabis, gaming, gambling and porn, our phones and ultra-processed food. But then there's some that are less expected. So, you know, caffeine, shopping, dating and sex. And then there's behavioral compulsions like people-pleasing, procrastinating, judgment and gossip, which are less known about, but they are still addictive. And we feel a withdrawal when we stop doing them.
So interesting. Maybe we could touch on a couple of them. What about that one you mentioned there, gossiping? I don't think that's one that people would think was addictive.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't have thought so either. But once I started diving into it, so say, for instance, in Sapiens, the author writes about how gossip is basically constructed our larger communities. Because what gossip does is it creates a shared moral conscientiousness around right and wrong. Because if you're being gossiped about, that tends to mean that the group think you've done something wrong. So gossip is like a community punishment. And it creates that moral fabric that so many communities are based upon. So actually, when you look back, gossip seems frivolous nowadays. You know, you have gossip columnists and celebrities being gossiped about, especially, you know, the Beckhams at the minute. But what we're doing as a community, but now it's on a global scale, is deciding who is right and who is wrong. And that's something that we cannot turn off. It's something that we want to do as humans naturally. So it's about being aware of that. We're not bad people if we gossip, but it does carry like a hangover. We do feel grubby afterwards, and that's not a great feeling.
I certainly felt that and become more conscious of it in recent years. You do kind of walk away and say, why did I go down that road, or why did I get sucked into that? And I know so much of it is natural. If something happens, you know, within a friendship group or a community, or even as you say, a celebrity story, people say, oh my God, did you hear? But it is that hangover. And is it that sort of high to low that is common in all addictions, that there's a high for a moment, but it's the come down, it's the hangover, as you described it. That's where the danger is.
Yeah, absolutely. And what happens is, so say, for instance, if we cast judgment on somebody, whenever we judge somebody, it carries a reward within our brain. It carries a neuroscientific buzz. This isn't me asserting this, this is my experts. So what happens is we get high. So we feel a bit superior to them. And then afterwards, our dopamine, our baseline dopamine gets dragged beneath. So we go into deficit. So that carries a consequence. And that's why when we're doing things that are instantly gratifying, whether it is eating sugar or, you know, clicking on a gossip column and going into a scroll hole or buying something we probably can't afford, there is a deficit afterwards because we go into a lack and then we go into craving and we want more fast dopamine, whether it's via Facebook or, you know, whatever we want to reach for. So it's really interesting. We put ourselves roller coaster, and that's why little addictions tend to snowball when we start a day with, say, caffeine and a sugary pastry and, you know, a gossip column, rather than starting it with something like a protein breakfast and taking our dog out for a walk and, you know, I don't know, writing gratitudes. That means that we end up on this roller coaster and we make choices that are less good for us for the rest of the day.
Yeah, I think that's so interesting. Obviously, there's going to be times where we're going to enjoy a coffee or a pastry, but when we're constantly reaching for something, it's an indication that our own foundation is not perhaps as solid as it should be, and it might be worth looking at. Do you find, Catherine, you live differently since researching for and writing this book?
Oh, yeah. I mean, and to be really clear, I love coffee and pastries. I have no intention of giving them up. I love clicking next episode. But what I was finding was that maybe only a third of my days were spent using things exactly the way I want to use them, right? So my intended usage and my actual usage, there was a mismatch there. Now that I've written the book and I've gathered all of these tips and, you know, found the ones that work for me, there's 130 in the book, but I've chosen, you know, 10 maybe work for me on a day-to-day basis. What I find is that maybe now I spend two-thirds of my time using things exactly the way I want to. You know, my screen time is between 2 and 3 hours, just like I want it to be, rather than tipping up into 4 or 5. But I'm still going to have those days, and I call them teenage days, where I just want to lie down and watch 3 hours of TV and, you know, throw ultra-processed food into my mouth and not do any adulting. And that's okay. I think it's really healthy to have that balance. But I did want the grander scheme to be more towards my best interest. So that's what I've found, that balance, and I'm really happy with it.
Yeah, just having some sort of control over it. There was one other thing I wanted to ask you before I let you go. In your conclusion, you mentioned heading off to a cabin to finish the writing of the book, which always has such romantic connotations to it, and how anybody would ever want to write a book. And it reminded you of a caravan in Donegal that your father had. Tell us about your times there.
Yeah, so I grew up in Northern Ireland. I know I don't sound like it in any way, but we moved to England when I was 10, and all of our family holidays were spent in Donegal, either in a cottage which had no running water and electricity, or in a caravan beside this lake. So, I mean, I have such amazing memories of going there. And it just really struck me when I went to this cabin, which was really overpriced, and you know, you lock your phone into this little box and they give you things to make a fire. And I was just like, this is just like the caravan in Donegal. It's just that this costs £120 a night, you know? So I think many of us are seeking to recreate that experience where we leave our homes and we're unreachable. And we go to a caravan and, you know, we don't have TV because we don't have reception. And it's just bliss because we're unplugging from that constant grind and hustle. So I think many of us could do well to sort of recreate that in modern life now. And I think there really is a huge leaning. Everyone seems to be leaning that way. And I think we've reached peak addiction when it comes to phones and Wi-Fi and, you know, TV and all of that. And we'll really start to reclaim our time in the coming years.
Do you ever return to Donegal, Sarah Jessica Parker style?
Yeah, I went back last year and stayed in an old schoolhouse, and there was no Wi-Fi. You know, we had to drive into the nearby village to get it. I absolutely loved it. My partner less so. My daughter loved it. You know, I went for a run, got chased by rams. It was amazing. And I'm planning to take her back there every couple of years at least, so that she knows about her roots and, you know, really spend some proper time in Ireland.
Well, I really, really enjoyed the book. It's a lovely mix, as you say, of personal stories and science and understanding, and really getting to the nub of something we're all living with, as you say, and practical advice on how we can manage it without necessarily having to live off-grid for the rest of our lives. The book is called Little Addictions. Best-selling author Catherine Gray, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you.
Alive and Kicking with Claire McKenna. Sunday morning at 8 on News Talk.